Beginning a new year allows us to make resolutions and take the opportunity to look at changes in the upcoming year. While they may not share their personal resolutions with us, columnist Marcos Breton from the Sacramento Bee and Ed Goldman from the Goldman State are here to share their takes on Sacramento and the year ahead. Next on Studio Sacramento.
For over 20 years, Five Star Bank has created thoughtful solutions to help the capital region thrive. From economic development and education to public health and safety, issues that are vitally important to Sacramento's prosperity. We're proud to be part of the conversation and hope you'll join in.
So, gentlemen, what topic, more so than anything else, do you think is going to dominate the news in 2020?
I would say that the issue of whether Sacramento can grow its jobs base and continue on this winning streak without pricing out the next generation of people is going to be a major story. We've already seen Sacramento County refuse to assist renters who were being gouged at the end of 2019 in what seemed like an easy vote and what other communities have done. And I think that the dynamic politics that still exists in Sacramento, even though the city is very liberal, I think the broader county is less so. And so I think that you are going to have a real clash between the folks who don't want to be left behind in this renaissance and those who want to profit from it as much as possible. And I've spoken with a number of developers who are saying, well, just let us make a lot of money for a little while. We want to have that little, they want to have what San Francisco.
Developers always
yes.
say that.
Yes, I know that. I know that. But so you're seeing a lot of smaller grassroots organizations who are screaming for their piece. And I think a lot of that's going to come to a head in 2020.
Ed, what do you think?
Well, I certainly agree with him. I also think that the homeless issue is going to hopefully in 2020 stop being a political cosmetic move, and that people are actually going to start figuring out ways to, if you're going to get people into homes, get them new lives.
Okay, that's a pretty strong term, a political cosmetic move. What do you
absolutely.
Mean by that? What do you mean by that?
Absolutely. If you think about Housing First from HUD, and its move to just get the people off the streets, and every politician, we've got to stop looking at them. And it's I think there's some very sincere elected officials who are very concerned about it. But I also think that it really becomes a matter of if we don't see them, they're gone. And it's not really that kind of problem. It's very systemic. You've got to get people new lives. You've got to give them education, medical care, all this stuff. And I think Daryl Steinberg means very well, and I hope some of those things come to pass.
Well, you've covered Steinberg pretty extensively, Marcos. What's the report card grade on homelessness at this point in terms of his efforts and that of the city?
Well, I think it's around a C minus, because the number of shelters that they've sought, it's been elusive. They tried to get something done at Cal Expo. They couldn't get the board there to agree. I think the mayor is swimming upstream in the sense that I believe that the general public in Sacramento is still largely in a place where we as a community have not come to terms with how deep this problem is. And we're still more at the point where we're complaining about it, angry about it, disgusted by it, and not in a place where we're kind of organizing behind solutions. And so the issue of shelters is you're trying to get a big number of people in one space. Why? Well, this is the piece that always gets lost, is to Ed's point, these folks need a lot of institutional support to get back up on their feet again. It's not just a matter of getting them into housing. If that were the case, they wouldn't be on the street in the first place.
It's warehousing them.
Initially, it is warehousing them, and it's. I think it's taken a lot of us, myself included, to come to grips with that. Because when people have asked me, well, what's your idea? I don't have one, honestly. And there's no really great model of a city that's doing it right that can compare.
Yeah,
with Sacramento.
Yeah, because this is an issue that confronts elected officials and communities all across the country. I am surprised, given your normal cheery attitude, Ed, that you seem less than convinced that 2020 is really going to make a difference in terms of...
No, I'm hopeful that it will, but I'm basing the hope on just that somebody's going to finally be honest about this thing, that it is less a cosmetic problem than anything else.
So I'm going to tell you guys surprised me in that I would have thought that you would have said just the general election itself of 2020 would be the biggest story of the year. And you rightly are focused on what's happening within the region, but tell us about the nation as a whole. How does that impact what happens here?
Well, I'm... at this stage, I am trying to determine in my mind if there is a Democrat in the field who can appeal to a broad enough base to win this thing. Because that was the problem in 16, in that you had a divisive candidate who was not able to replicate what President Obama had achieved and lost. And I'm of the mind, maybe Ed would disagree with me, I think it's a waste of time to try to flip Trump voters. I think history is going to sort them out, especially the ones in our community. I'm looking.
Really?
Yeah, I do not think that it is a good use of time or resources to try to flip that base, because it's, in my opinion, in interacting with people in my voicemail, in my emails, that with some of these folks, Trump appeals to them on a deeper level than economics. I think the whole thing, economic anxiety, was bunk. And I think that
if it was bunk, give me the three-word response as to what it was really about.
I think they identify with his identity politics. All of his ideology, his terminology relates to a country that no longer exists, but he has persuaded people that it does and that he's the embodiment
of it. Or that they
it.
Can hold on to it. Ed, you're
I want to run on that because it's great. Because Trump, I had the good fortune when I was in theater when I was young, twice to play the Music Man. And that's Harold Hill, and he comes to this small town in River City, Iowa. River City is the interesting connection here. And he dazzles them. He convinces them that they're going to get a band. And he's not a musician at all. Well, Trump has gone from being the Music Man to Inspector Clouseau in just 3 years. Everything that goes wrong, he says, I meant to do that. You know, and he's a pathological liar. He's a sociopath. He's a narcissist. What word did I leave out? And a poo-poo head. You
so,
know, I mean,
so,
I just,
so you've got strong opinions, though.
I'm working on
and
it.
And the thing is, I don't think it matters. Uh-huh. It doesn't matter to that base. So
hold on. Let me just play devil's advocate here, though. Trump won, okay? He won the Electoral College. He certainly didn't win the popular vote.
Right.
But how do you respond to those people who say, you know, the Democrats are so far on the left that essentially that those that are either in the center of the country or maybe do find some things about this country's history worth preserving, that the Democrats have no respect for it. Well, hold on. that if you are a person of faith, then you're obviously either not sophisticated or you're bigoted. That if you question at all anything that is put out as dogma by the left, that somehow it has to be rooted in some sort of bigotry of some form, and that there is no room for reasonable people to have differing opinions.
That's a very important word there, reasonable. I think, you know, when people talk about the Reagan phenomenon of many years ago, yes, he had charisma, yes, he was charming and all that, but he also had a sensibility that was reasonable. What can we do that's reasonable? Now, I'm no fan of his administration and a lot of things he did, but watching him, it was hard not to be a fan of him because he didn't go to extremes. He seemed like a rational person, and that's what we need again.
So let me just ask the quick question.
Sure.
If you're a betting man, betting someone who you cared about's fortune, is Trump reelected next year in 2020, or does he lose?
I think he loses. Actually, I think he might resign.
I don't think he'll be the president in the next cycle, and I don't have great faith in the U.S. Senate to remove him from office.
No.
But I don't think that he'll be president again, and then it'll be up to the historians to sort out this phenomenon that we've lived through. But our institutions have been under attack for the last several years. And I think there's been a lot of damage that has been done that has permeated down to the local level that's been exacerbated here in our own community.
So let's talk about a little something closer to home.
Sure.
One of the phenomenon that has become just a part of our life recently has been these blackouts from PG&E in order to reduce the risk of power lines and their equipment contributing to forest fires and the devastation that's happened to us over the past few years. What does it say about us as a state to the point where we are shutting down the grid and putting people in absolute darkness?
And risk
for days at a time in 2020.
Well, it says something about people who say, let business and corporations run everything because then the world will be great. You have a public utility here with SMUD where there is, granted, we don't have the same fire hazards, but SMUD is a fabulous utility because it's public, it's accountable, and PG&E's only people they report to are not the customers, it's their board and their shareholders. And those are the ones who they have to please. And so whenever people's risk becomes a financial consideration, you're going to have this constant
dilemma. But wait a minute, that's a slippery slope, Ed, where it is that you can end up essentially governmental takeover of every industry because shareholders, there are plenty of companies.
Just the ones that don't work. And when you're dealing with something as absolutely vital and necessary as electrical power and gas, you really can't put it in the hands of people who are simply there to make a profit. We already have the oil cartels and all that and determining what the cost of our gasoline is at the pump. But when it comes to the necessary things, will my kidney dialysis machine work or will I be in a blackout? That's dreadful. And the fact that PG&E didn't update or upgrade its entire system in all the years it could, but instead was so busy showing profits to its shareholders. That tells you a little something about it. And I think the government, which is not supposed to show a profit, or some sort of public-private entity as SMUD is, would have been a good solution.
You know, I think for me, the issue is even bigger than that, is that it's been a wake-up call for me in that I haven't paid close enough attention to climate change. Particularly in the last few years, and that it always, at least to me, seemed to be that issue that was looming in the future. And my takeaway from our issues with PG&E and the fires and the blackouts now is that climate change is here.
Yes.
And we're feeling it. And I'm still amazed at the number of people who will disagree with that or say that it's a media creation. I grew up in this region, and I celebrated a birthday early in November, and when I was a kid, it always rained on my birthday. And that's no longer the case. And I can't remember having so many years where everything is so dry. Growing up in the 70s and 80s, we had a tremendous amount of rain, and I feel like that we're still sort of in a cloud and in denial about the fact that we've, as a people, have gotten to this point where the climate has markedly changed and we're feeling the effects of it.
Well, you know, it's funny. When I finally came to grips with climate change, similar thing, in that when I grew up here in the 70s and 80s, one of the things that was remarkable to me and that I loved was that you could get up in the morning and you could see the Sierras over here and the coastal range over here. And it was always beautiful. And when people came to Sacramento, they're like, wow, look at where you're at. Well, more days than not, you can't even see the mountains anymore.
Right. It reminds me of when I was, I was born in New York, but from the time I was 8, I lived in Southern California until I moved up here in 1976. And of course, in Southern California, it's always the same. I mean, the weather was usually always the same. And I remember I lived by the ocean and I worked 8 miles inland. And it was so smoggy all the time that I was, one day after a rainstorm, I could see the San Bernardino Mountains in the distance. And I thought I was having a drug rush. I thought, where am I? Where am I going right now? Because I could suddenly see the scenery around me. So I can relate to that. I think I agree with him very much, with Marcos, about the climate change. I've actually been attuned to this and interested in it for a very long time, just because I've had clients who were water agencies for my marketing consulting. And they've been talking about it. And at first they were saying, we're not going to call it global warming. And eventually they got to climate change, and that was a big deal. But they all see it, because a lot of them, they're water purveyors, and they live in a rural environment. And they've watched how things have changed, and they've lived there all their lives as well.
Well, fundamentally, the thing that I wonder about is whether or not commerce actually and the normal things of life continue to proceed within these areas as they normally have been, because, you know, hospitals and life and safety things are affected, commerce is affected, people just going about their daily lives is affected. And if this is the new normal for, I've heard 10 years reported in the Bee, potentially, this has tremendous implications for not just aspects of the state, but the state as a whole.
Mm-hmm. We've reached a point where we're afraid of the wind. Our state is so dry, and now whenever the wind goes up, I know my anxiety level goes up. Having been to Paradise right after the fire, and I thought I had seen some things in my 30-year journalism career until that. So it's a real statement, I think, for all of us to really absorb that our habits. Our wastefulness have gotten us to this point.
I had that same, not to interrupt, but I'm interrupting. I had that exact same experience. I drove up to Paradise after that. And it was like hell on earth. And it was just, it was interesting to me when Trump visited the site and he referred to it as Eden or something like that. And Jerry Brown was behind him saying, Paradise. He didn't even know the name of the town, or Shangri-La, or whatever he called it in his bumbling way. But I the same thing, where it is a devastating, almost moonscape, Paradise and some of the other places. And I had seen forest fire devastation many, many years ago in L.A., and not actually rapid wildfire stuff. And every year, it would the fires would roll up the Malibu Canyon and destroy the homes of the motion picture moguls, and they would bravely rebuild their homes in the exact same place with the exact same lack of any protection. So,
well, when you hear about the fires and you look at issues like homelessness, there are a lot of voices that we hear from. But I'd like to ask you both, who are the voices we're going to be hearing from in 2020? Who do you have your eye on? That maybe is not part of the group of usual suspects, but people who really got something to say or are going to have a big influence on where it is that our region and beyond goes.
Well, I mean, because of the state that we live in, I think that we're going to hear a lot. We're already hearing a lot from labor unions who continually have a huge impact on our economy and our policy, and I think the whole issue of AB5 was something that was part and parcel with the power that the unions have. And I think that if I were to say locally, I think that you have people who are trying to create a different Sacramento within the context of the state of California and are bumping up against opposition. I'm very curious to see what Barry Broom and the Greater Sacramento Economic Council is able to achieve with respect to generating more investment in Sacramento in what people still describe as a very unfriendly business climate for people coming from out of state.
I'm not sure, I'm going to just tell you, I'm not sure I agree anymore. I think that's an old saw that had a lot of validity years ago. But, you know, regardless of political affiliation or where they are on the spectrum, the state may not be a hospitable place, but this region really seems to have turned a corner where, particularly among young people, and you've written about this extensively, are about supporting entrepreneurship.
Yeah, well, because they're finding their place in the sun here in Sacramento, and that's a wonderful thing. But I have to tell you, I've started a new column. It's called The Goldman State, and it runs three times a week and shows up in your inbox whether you like it or not. And I just had, in the last week, three subscribers say, it's a really nice column, but I've actually moved out of California, so you can stop sending it to me. And it was all because of the business climate. And
really?
Or cost of living. Mm-hmm. One person moved to a town in New Mexico and said, you know, things are 10 times less expensive here. And I said, yeah, but when you walk outside, you're in New Mexico. You know, you're not necessarily, which I love parts of New Mexico, but it's not exactly, you know, a hot town on a Friday night. So it's... so it's interesting. There's always a trade-off in all that stuff.
Let me ask you this. There's been an exodus, okay, that you're describing. We've also had things coming in. We recently got our franchise with Major League Soccer.
Right.
What's that mean for us?
I think it means we're going to see legitimate development in the downtown rail yards in our natural lifetimes, where I was starting to doubt that was going to happen. Starting in early 2020, they're going to start moving earth to build a soccer stadium and an entertainment district around it. And if Golden One Center is any marker, success has bred success. And it was a huge achievement in the sense that Sacramento used to be a place, like when I first moved here 30 years ago, Sacramento was a place where people spent more time shooting things down than trying to get things done. And that some of that still exists, but we've been on a winning streak now of 5, 6, 7 years where you're finding more people in the public domain who are trying to figure out how to get things done.
And that's the point I was trying to make, Ed, that locally, statewide, we've got big issues. And I think most reasonable people say it's pretty unfriendly. Mm-hmm. But within the region, it would seem that, particularly with the push of the younger generations coming and taking leadership roles, that there's a welcoming that wasn't there before.
Well, I'd love to see that happen because I love Sacramento and I've been here since 1976.
Let me go to this, though.
Okay.
What do you think was the biggest unreported issue of this year that, regardless, we're all going to have to deal with in 2020?
Well, Golden One informed me late in the season that it had $20 million and it was going to give a gift of $20 million to all its members. And I was thrown by it because a windfall of $8 is nothing to be trifled with. And I was thinking at the time that if Golden One were to not renew its naming rights, that could have probably gotten up to $10 a gift. So as far as, I think what we can look forward to in 2020 is that the cost of the stadium will increase. And people say, well, the costs have gone up. And practically everything, the costs have gone up. Everything that we touch, the costs will go up.
So you think that there's a reckoning that'll be coming sometime?
I don't think it'll be a reckoning. I think people say, so the costs went up, and they'll just go ahead with it.
Marcos?
I feel like, and I blame myself as much as anybody for this, that one of the stories that we haven't been able to report effectively, two of them really, is this the state of our public schools in Sacramento, and our inability to recognize that the district doesn't have enough money, and we always frame the issue as the teachers against the district, where there's a much bigger story of not having enough money to educate kids. And so we're having a district that is more than 50% African American Latino kids who are falling behind because our district has just small pockets of success in well-heeled neighborhoods. And so we feel really great about ourselves in Sacramento, about how diverse we are and how cool we are. And to me, when I look at the state of our schools, that we're not as cool as we think we are. We all see what the problem is, that we don't have enough money to educate our children. And instead, we don't want to talk about common sense solutions because we don't want to be perceived as anti-union. And I fault the politicians for that. Daryl Steinberg, Kevin McCarthy, Phil Cerna, all of them, and also the general public for not either being clued in enough or care enough. There's a whole generation of Sacramentans, of kids who are supposed to be our next workforce, our next leadership force, who are not getting the opportunities that they deserve because they're in the wrong school.
All right, and we're going to leave it there. Gentlemen, thank you. And let's go ahead and reconvene at the end of next year and see how we did.
Call my people.
And that's our show. Thanks to our guests, and thanks to you for watching Studio Sacramento. I'm Scott Syfax. See you next time right here on KVIE.
Thank you for listening to Studio Sacramento from KVIE Public Television. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes to help others find it.
For over 20 years, Five Star Bank has created thoughtful solutions to help the Capital Region thrive. From economic development and education to public health and safety, issues that are vitally important to Sacramento's prosperity. We're proud to be part of the conversation and hope you'll join in.
All episodes of Studio Sacramento, along with other KVIE programs, are available to watch online at kvie.org/video.